My name is Dan. Welcome to the Passive Income Doctor podcast.
Just a reminder, this podcast is for entertainment purposes. Nothing here is financial advice. Please speak to your trusted professional advisors. Views expressed by podcast participants are solely their own.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Passive Income Doctor. Today, we have a special guest, Dr. Ursula Carr. Welcome, Ursula, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Can you start by letting our audience know a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure, of course. So I am a doctor and a specialist histopathologist. I came over to Australia in 2009 from the UK, but I am originally from Poland. So what I do is I diagnose diseases looking at the microscope at the tissue samples. So I am a doctor, but I diagnose diseases. I don't treat them. I collaborate very closely with clinicians. So the patients are actually well looked after. So they have the diagnosis to trigger appropriate management.
Yeah, and I think it's a very important role. You know, so many other doctors kind of rely on, you know, pathology, histopathology. Just briefly, like, how did you end up choosing that as a specialty? And
Of course, this is interesting because when I graduated from medical school in Poland, and then I was a bit adventurous and I decided to go to UK just to learn the language and well, but somehow I stayed. I applied for grant to do PhD degree in tumor biology. So I finished that at the University of Leeds. And with that kind of scientific background, I really liked it. Even so, my interests were, when I was a medical student, I wanted to do either psychiatry or surgery. But psychiatry was kind of close to my heart. But then, you know, I don't know, I went and I did science. I loved it. And I decided this histopathology would be the best thing to do because it's more scientifically orientated. You're kind of more in touch with science, with particularly molecular biology and tumor biology and so on. So that's what and actually why I become a histopathologist. I've met a Polish doctor who was a histopathologist, and it turned out that we were studying in the same medical school, but we didn't know each other. And because she talked to me about how it is in England, and I got interested, and I went that way. So yeah.
And how do you find working in the UK versus Australia? You know, I've previously had some other guests that have made the migration, and I'm sure most of my listeners are Australian based, but there are some in the UK. Like, how do you find working in the UK versus Australia?
It is very different because in the UK I worked for the NHS, National Health Service, in a hospital scenario. I believe if I was here in a hospital environment, would be probably kind of similar in to some extent. But I work in the private sector, so it is very different. How different? Is probably what I miss most is the MD meetings. So in the hospital environment, I was a part of like integrated patient care, where a pathologist needs to go to multidisciplinary meetings, and we have to talk about the patient, the findings. We listen to other doctors, the radiologists, the group of doctors, pathologists, radiologists, surgeons, a bunch of nurses, and everybody involved in the patient care, deciding based on results and all the diagnostic tools and what is the best management for that given patient. But there are some meetings that I attend. There are some, I am actually specializing in skin pathology. Dermatopathology is very narrow. So, you know, whenever there is an opportunity to have clinical meeting, I would try to go and attend.
Yeah. Awesome. Changing gears a bit. So this show, I guess I aim to improve the financial health of doctors, and kind of money is a taboo subject, and Traditionally, doctors are not the best managers of money. So starting from kind of growing up or childhood, what were the discussions like around money or your mindset about money as you grew up?
No discussion as such about money. I believed that I heard a lot about poverty because my parents were born during the Second War. They were little, but they remember, not having shoes, not having food, and being cold in the winter, and so on. I also heard my mom talking to me how hard it was, how little money they had when when I was born, and she told me about when she wore some clothes, a skirt or something, and it was worn out. She would, with help of her sister who was handy, she would turn it around and sew it again, so on the good side, so I re always remembered that. But having said that, and we didn't have a car, there was no telephone, there was just one, two channels on the television. But because everybody was at the same on the same boat, I didn't know what I was missing. So I didn't really had the feeling of scarcity because I had a fabulous childhood. We just played. I was outdoors all the time, even in the winter, sleds and going down the snow, the hills, and making snowmen and fighting with, snowballs. And I just didn't know that there was other life, that you could travel. We didn't travel abroad. But I was happy. So I didn't have that kind of scarcity mindset, or feeling that I'm missing something is not fair. I haven't got what others have. But what I did definitely is very hard, very strongly imprinted in my mind was to work hard for your money, and primarily to educate yourself. So I went on and spent 20 odd years educating myself. Okay, because that's what my parents told me, that you have to, to have money, to have good life, you have to be educated, well educated, and you also have to really, it's basically, like Kiyosaki mantra, not to do it. it's trading all your time for money. There was nothing mentioned ever about investment because my parents were teachers, and so they were building their own house or our family house from little loans and savings. So it was they were very frugal. It was all about savings and and getting there by being very frugal. But there was no talk about investments. So I was completely illiterate in that kind of field of investment.
And I think lots of cultures, even myself from Asian background, kind of being ingrained that education, very important and way to get ahead. And definitely I think education has a role, but then also as start earning money and then you start you see there's only so many hours you can work in a day or a week, and then that's right. Kind of putting towards your money, turning active income into passive income. So I guess it sounds like a happy childhood. As you kind of became registrar and then fellow consultant, and your income increases as a doctor, did your mindset around money change or investing change? And this leads us on to you can share as little or as much as you want. What were your kind of first steps into your investing journey?
So it was quite kind of late in my life that I've started investing because when I was a registrar, I met my husband and we got married. And we had four children. So he left job and he became a house dad because he was not a doctor. So I had a higher income and made sense to do it. And so I was the only breadwinner. So again, it wasn't. The money wasn't ever particularly excessive. It was just enough to get by, buy a house, pay a mortgage, go on holidays once or twice a year, the typical thing, and have a loan for the car and so on, and a childcare, etc. But my husband, when we moved to Australia, my husband got diagnosed with terminal cancer And it happened actually, literally probably 2 3 months after we bought a house in Sydney, with the view of because initially we hesitated, do we stay, do we go back? And then we are happy to stay, decided to stay, bought a house, and he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He passed away 16 months later, and I was left with 4 young kids. With massive mortgage. He wasn't particularly well insured and no family support, and me, on my own. And I was very fearful, and I decided, I have to do something about my future and future of my children. And I started educating myself in investment. And I invested quite a bit of money in education, for property investment and shares. Because I didn't know anything, not a thing. I sort of invested in, I've done a lot of research. So it wasn't like, I went and bought something just out of on impulse. I've done a lot of research, but some of my investments were successful, some less successful. So, for example, I bought a property in Western Sydney suburb where I did a very cosmetic reno, and on the same title, I put a granny flat and a studio for triple income. On the other hand, I bought a couple of properties in Victoria where I was hoping, because I attended some developing courses, with the view of sometime in the future, or then develop 6 new dwellings. And that didn't go that well because we had what we had, the materials went up, the prices went up, the rates went up, there was a shortage of tradies, and interest rates. It's I sold one with the profit, and the second one is just still holding there, not knowing currently what to
Just
do with
curious,
it.
when did you buy the Victoria blocks to develop?
2000, it was post-COVID,
Oh
just after COVID.
Okay.
2002. Yeah, just after COVID. So when I did my initial feasibility, the numbers stuck up, but later, because of those developments, the numbers didn't stack up. So even so, and I engaged a property mentor, I engaged a buyer's agent. It wasn't like I went and bought it. I did a lot of research, but sometimes, the same property, literally exactly the same next door, I did nothing to it, and I just sold it like that with quite a significant profit. And the second property, because I wanted to hold it, the situation currently is as it is. So it's not. But I think the lesson to learn for me was, and for whoever is listening and is interested in this, to be always prepared for various things that may happen in the market. So invest comfortably that if things go wrong, you still have money to pay your mortgage, to invest even further if necessary to keep going, so you're not getting into bankruptcy or some kind of urgent sales, repossession or something like that. And even with huge there's always a risk. Even with huge research-based advice, there's always a risk. But
Yeah, thanks for sharing and being so open about the journey. And yeah, I guess it's a reminder for myself and other people that yeah, nothing in life is guaranteed. Like obviously we want to invest for the future, but we also have a bit of balance and want to enjoy life now, because yeah, there's no guarantee how long it may live. And another point which came to mind as you spoke was about I have people ask me, is it too late to invest? Or I wasn't taught this in high school, university. I'm even a new fellow. Don't know where to start. It's too hard, and I'm too busy with career, kids, etc. But I think it is important to still set aside some time. And no matter where your starting position, some people, might start with a large inheritance, or some people start with not much at all. But I think the important thing is, and I commend you for taking education and then taking action as well.
Absolutely. And I believe there's no wrong or good or but obviously the earlier the better, but there's no wrong time to start. As long as you've got a very clear idea why you're buying, what is your actual why you're buying, what is your actual goal for the investment? Are you in property? You're looking for capital growth. So you have to have some years ahead to actually achieve that. Or you're looking for rental yield. Is it residential? Is it commercial? All these things. And what is your exit? How you're going to. And when you've got that all clear, then you start looking. I always kind of I believe that asking for advice the right people is very important, because from my experience, I very often I hear people, or I see people online, on social media asking, I would like to invest. Who do I ask? Do you know any financial planner? Would you recommend? And I'm thinking, well, and I'm thinking, because I know actually doing the developing the property development course, there is a strategy that actually developers are approaching financial planners and they make a deal and the financial planner is selling the properties of the plan or whatever. So you have to be aware, and it may be excellent investment. I'm not saying it's a bad investment, but you have to be aware that if the planner has a deal with someone and has a conflict of interest, it may not be the right property for you to buy, because people, it's the same with estate agent. I would not never go and ask estate agent for advice, because estate agent wants to sell the property yesterday, and they have no interest in the buyer's circumstances. And even buyer's agent that is supposed to buyer's agent is acting on the behalf of a vendor of a buyer, obviously, but they also have their own agenda. So to go and ask for advice, one needs to be very well prepared, have a very clear strategy, criteria, know already. There may be some discussion about the best suburbs and stuff, but you have to have very clear understanding to actually ask for advice, because they would be bringing properties that are totally not aligned with your goals, and trying to sell you and tell you that it's excellent opportunity. So it's very easy to get confused.
Yeah, that's right. And in interest of time, this is could be time for another episode in the future with you to talk about how to know who to trust and planners. But I guess from your experience talking to different experts, and it's very hard, but what would one tip for our listeners be in terms of how to decide who's on your team, and how do you decide who to trust?
I personally invested in mentoring, but it doesn't need to be, because I was late in investing and I wanted to invest pretty quickly, to have some time to pay off the mortgages and have some exit strategy. But that's not essential. But I would look for people who have no particular interest in you buying certain property, so they don't have any profit from it. Or if you're asking people who do have a profit, so make sure that you ask second opinion, being transparent and, like do your own research. There is, own research is the key here. One hasn't got time, it's very easy. Oh, I don't have time. I just pay somebody to do it. It is your money. It is your property. It is your investment. And nobody is going to look after it with the same kind of care and and heart as you, because it's your.
Awesome advice. So I guess moving on now to talk about, life coaching, which I know you're very passionate about. I guess this ties a little bit into kind of like mentoring and things like that. How, as a doctor, did you discover life coaching, and what What makes you so keen about life coaching?
So, as I mentioned, my husband passed away, and I, as a mom of four young kids, they were like 6 to 12, and I've worked full time, and I burn out several times, and there was a time where, when I actually felt that I would not be able to get up and go to work, and it was very dark time, I felt like really suffocated within. Small room, no windows, no doors. I couldn't see the way out because I felt like I couldn't continue. I couldn't work like that anymore. I couldn't keep the family going and be, a supportive mom for my children. But at the same time, I knew that I didn't know, I didn't have, I'm a pathologist. What can I do? It's people say, oh, change the specialty. As we know, it's not that easy because you have to go back to the training, you take your exam. So when you be out is the least thing that you want to do. Exactly. And but I don't know, it was really bad at the time, and if it wasn't for my children, I'm not sure. I even felt like, I would rather have cancer, and I would rather it was me, not my husband, who passed away. That's how I felt at the time. So I engaged in to help myself and help my children. I engaged in self-development. I went through the journey of multiple podcasts and books and courses that I've done, and I developed various strategies. Initially, it was like to survive, just surviving from day to day. But eventually, I developed a lot of like techniques and mindset in particular that helped me to actually enjoy my life. And my circumstances are such that, okay, I'm invested in properties, but it's not like I have abundance of passive income. I still have to work, and I regained that kind of interest in my profession and happiness in life. Like, I'm able to actually enjoy my life. I'm not waiting, or enjoying my life when I retire, when my children grow up. I make sure that I enjoy every day. There's always something to enjoy. And because I see a lot of burnout, a lot of disappointment and exhaustion, particularly amongst medical professionals, doctors, nurses, and other professionals, I am very passionate about helping. I decided to help others to do the same, to be able to get out of that vicious cycle and get better and enjoy life again. And that's why I've done the coaching qualifications. I'm not sure if people, your listeners, know, but coaching is not a mental health advice. So if anybody's got mental health problem like depression, so it's not for the coach to sort it out because I don't have any mental health qualifications. Coach is a person who would focus on the current situation and on achieving what a client wants to achieve, not dwelling into, root cause and not dwelling onto past and trying to understand. It is purely like really focused on, okay, I'm currently in this bad situation. I want to get out and I want to be better. I want to achieve something better life. I want to have a house. I want to have a lovely family and relationship, whatever the goals are. And the coach just helps to keep that vision in mind and get there in a fast track. So rather than me taking years and years, coach is able to help someone to get that desired future faster. And that's what is good. And my interest pre prior interest in psych in psych psychiatry, psychotherapy is kind of kicking in, even so it's nothing to do with psychiatry, but I really like how the mind, human mind works, and being with people and talking. So that's very, very interesting and very stimulating, very rewarding as well.
Thanks for and the I guess it's important to note the distinction between kind of psychiatry, mental health, and then also coaching as well. With the coaching, like, did you have a coach or life coach yourself? Did anyone inspire you to do life coaching?
Yes. So after my husband passed away, I was depressed. I was in a bad state, and Greeting and everything. I did see psychologist, but it didn't. Maybe it did help to some degree, of course, and counseling, etc., to process the grief. But when I was burnout, it wasn't depression. It was just like something else. It was just that feeling of suffocating hopelessness. I didn't see any kind of way out, any light in the tunnel. It was all that feeling of being so helpless and hopeless. And I did have life coach, yes. And with that coach, we yeah, it helped me to focus on, interestingly, when we have problems, and it is our default mode where we tend to focus on that problem, and all our energy goes to that problem. We keep thinking about it and thinking and dwelling on it and looking for solutions. But when we approach the problem, the looking for solution with that, from that space of being stressed out, fearful, sad, we don't see other things. The solution is not probably the best because we kind of close our eyes a little, and we are very limited, I believe, in our seeing opportunities, seeing those solutions. And I believe when we actually change the focus on, okay, what would I like to create instead? I have this situation. I burn, initially in a very, very severe burnout is about getting you out of that state. And there are some tools that help me to do it. But later on, it was about just really keeping that focus on, okay, what I would love instead. I would love to have lovely family. I would love to enjoy my life again. I would love to be able to go through weekend and Sunday not thinking about Monday, because I used to do that, and I managed to kind of ruin my Sunday and weekend, working already thinking about a coming up week. And that was and then you start seeing, okay, what can I do today to get me closer to that goal? Just little steps, not being overwhelmed. Okay, there's such a difference where I am now and when I want to be. Oh my God, how do I get there? And that can be so overwhelming. But if you take those, do it in a tiny little steps, every little move, it just gets you there. And it's like compounded growth, like an investment on your account. It just adds and adds, and it grows exponentially. So and you get there much faster than you even think.
Yeah, that's right.
And
Good habits compound, and your actions, daily actions compound to add up to big results over a long period of time. Now, I guess a lot of doctors would be listening in and be a little bit skeptical about life coaching and, would it even benefit me? I guess, doctors often tend to be kind of, perfectionist, type A personalities. I'll just work harder. I'll just push through it. I'll just, I don't need help. I can sort it by myself. What would you say to those people? And, I guess, is there a particular type of doctor or health professional that would benefit from life coaching?
There are people who can manage themselves, so they don't need a life coach. I sometimes hear, life coaches saying, you've got to have life coach. People go through life and they don't ever have a life coach, and they're doing pretty well. It just depends on the circumstances and on a personality. I believe if someone is in a situation like I was, it wasn't like clinical depression, but it was just burnout is recognized now by WHO as a condition. And it can get like the coaching can, but I specialize in burnout, and I know very there's actually a community of doctors who are coaching other doctors. And because we get it, I had a coach who wasn't a medic. And sometimes the advice was like, oh, okay, well, say no, refuse to do it. Like, how do you refuse? I go to work and I said, no, thank you. I'm not doing it. It's just not possible. We get other doctors because we went through the same thing, and we just know that some things are not possible. The advice is being given is just not practical. But there are certain things that I, for example, do during the day. I have a very structured day. I have a structure to how I actually get up, what I do during the day, and what I do in the evening, and you know, before I go to sleep. So it may be it seem boring, but I got that structure, and that structure is absolutely solid. And because of it, I not only am surviving whatever is thrown at me, I don't get flustered anymore and depressed and stressed out to the maximum. I can deal with it, and I can, you know, still look forward to my day, evening, you know, my weekend with children, and look forward to. I make sure that I always have something to look forward to, and you know, always find that kind of enjoyment in life.
Nank, thank you so much again for coming onto the show and sharing your journey, studies, investing, and also life coaching. Is there any kind of final advice? It doesn't have to be investing, it could be just in general for our listeners and our doctors out there.
Yes, I just would like perhaps, you know, if anybody who is listening and is suffering from burnout, from exhaustion, it's very hard to deal with it by yourself, and there is no shame. There is no taboo anymore. You know, it's a recognized condition, and there is so much. I would say, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive, and there are so many free resources. So I would say that I, from my toolbox, I would suggest that, you know, very simple thing to do in the morning. Instead of, I used to just, first thing, I would just take my mobile phone and look for messages and emails, and already this mindset is, you know, stress. I meditate, but not everybody is meditator, and not everybody wants to spend so time. But even one thing that you can do every morning before you pull out that phone, just think about, okay, I'm stressed out. If you start disappointed, exhausted, just find one thing that you are happy about. There's always something that in your life that is happy, that you are happy or is going well. If not, because there would be circumstances where so miserable that it's nothing you can think of, then find something from the past, like, you know, your wedding day, or when the child was born, or some fantastic holiday, something really that creates that emotion, you know, of happiness. And that emotion is setting our, it's a specific mindset that it just helps us to go through the day. And I would always like come back to that emotion a few times a day. And then in the evening, if one is not meditating, just think about one thing that you've done well, you know, did well during the day, and anything that went well, and just pat yourself on the back and do that for a week, and I guarantee there would be some good results.
Yep. How can people learn more about what you do and connect with you?
I have a website. It's called medicrevive.com, and hello@medicrevive.com. One word, medicrevive.com.
No worries. Yeah, you can just send me the details, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. Yeah. Awesome.
Yes.
Thank you.
I have also a very cool tool on my website called Life Scan, where you can do the little quiz, and it would show you which areas are good and which areas are not. We are quite disbalanced, so it's kind of interesting tool if anybody is interested to have a go.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming onto the show. And to all our listeners, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Passive Income Doctor. Please share this with anyone you think will find helpful. Subscribe, and I'll see you on the next one. Thanks for listening to today's show. Please take a moment now to hit the subscribe button and share the podcast, because this will help others benefit also. So until next time, keep taking steps to improve your financial health.